Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Nurse's Secret by Amanda Skenendor, read by Vanessa Johansson. Chapter 1. New York City, 1883. Travelers sluiced from the newly arrived trains onto the platforms, like privy muck into the sewer, halting and sluggish. Their voices echoed through the car house, blending with the wheeze of steam and whine of metal. Daylight fought with streaks of soot and drifts of snow to penetrate the glass ceiling above. Una, however, preferred the shadows. She watched the travelers from behind one of the great ornamental trusses that supported the roof. Watched and waited. The first to emerge were always the businessmen, bankers, speculators, oilmen, factory owners. They strode across the platform like it was their own private foyer, perturbed but undaunted by the noisome crowds. Time was money to these men, and their hurry and hubris made them easy marks should one be willing to suffer their over-perfumed clothes and superior airs. Today Una was not. Close on their heels came the coach class, weary-looking women with wide-eyed children clinging to their skirts, highfalutin debutantes, and their weighed-down porters, traveling merchants with leather-bound cases of their wares, country folk carting chickens and leading braying goats. Many carried little more than they could squeeze into their traveling sack. A change of underclothes, a half-eaten loaf of bread, a worn Bible with a name and address of some distant relative tucked inside. Nothing worth Una's time. Then he appeared, the very man Una was awaiting. Well-dressed, but not foppishly so. A ruddy, youthful complexion. He was a Middle West man, to be sure. Indiana, perhaps. Ohio. Illinois. Precisely where didn't matter, only that he was not a New Yorker. Judging from the way his wide eye scanned for a signpost or placard to direct him through the throngs, he was entirely new to the city. Una checked that her hat was securely pinned, and bit her lips to bring out their color. She unfastened the latch on her travel case, holding the handles tight so it remained closed. The man shuffled and bobbed along the platform until his eyes lit on the overhanging sign, directing travelers to the 42nd Street exits. Then his shoulders squared and step quickened. Una threaded her way through the crowd toward him. When his eyes flickered up again, this time to a large clock perched high in the central tower, at the far end of the platform, Una stepped in front of him. The man barreled into her. She gave a soft cry and dropped her traveling case, its contents scattering at their feet.
"Oh, I do beg your pardon, miss," the man said.
"It was my fault, sir. I was uncertain of my way."
"You and me both. I've never been in such a large station."
She knelt to collect her scattered belongings, flashing him a timid smile when he bent down beside her. The faint scent of tobacco clung to his fine Chesterfield coat. "Largest station in the world," she said. "At least that's what I've heard." He handed her a ribbon-trimmed bonnet and worsted wool shawl, which she carefully folded and tucked inside her bag.
"You really needn't trouble yourself."
"It's the least I can do."
He reached for another piece of clothing, then froze, his neck and ears reddening to match his cheeks. Una snatched the silk chemise, its smooth fabric and lace hem brushing the tips of his gloved fingers as she whisked it into her bag. In a show of embarrassment, she dropped her chin, hiding her face beneath the wide brim and drooping plumage of her hat. He wobbled on his haunches, his Chesterfield brushing the dirty floor. Una gathered up the last of her clothing and stuffed it in her bag.
"Thank you," she said,
latching the bag and standing. The man stood too.
"Again, my apologies, miss."
He dusted off his overcoat and glanced again at the clock.
"Can I see you to a carriage?"
Una dared another glance at his wide, honest face, another timid smile.
"That's very kind, but I'm departing, not arriving."
"Oh?"
"Yes, sir. Back home to Maine. I'd only come for a brief visit to comfort a sick friend."
"I see."
he said, disappointment evident in his voice. Thank you again. Una curtsied and hurried toward the boarding trains. At the far end of the car house, she crossed the tracks and slipped into the crowded waiting room. After tucking herself into the corner, she surveyed the room. A policeman stood at the far end, besieged by an elderly man brandishing a train schedule. Una smirked and opened her bag. Wrapped inside the shawl was the Middle West man's cigarette case, pure silver by the look of it, and ornately etched with scrolling filigree. On the back were the man's initials, JWC. But those could be burnished away easily enough, if Marm Bly didn't want to melt it down. After another glance at the copper, she slipped the cigarette case from her bag and into a pocket hidden within her ample skirt folds. It had been easy as Tilly to free the case while the man worried after her scattered clothes. It practically fell out of his overcoat when he bent down to help her. Diving into the coat's inner pockets was riskier, but that lacy chemise did the trick every time. While the man bumbled with embarrassment, she'd slipped a hand inside and relieved him of a few bills from his pocketbook and two silver dollars. Una closed her bag and strolled from the waiting room out to Vanderbilt Avenue. The day's waning sunlight did little to warm the January air. Four separate rail companies ran lines through Grand Central Depot, each with its own baggage rooms and waiting areas. With a stash of counterfeit tickets tucked inside her coat sleeve, Una could easily pass from one room to the next, and back and forth from the car house. More than 100 trains stopped at the depot each day, spewing dupes into the city. It was easy pickings if you were smart. Una never lingered in one place too long, never returned to the same waiting room more than once a day, never snatched more than she could easily hide. A good thief had her rules and kept to them. The Middle West man, Mr. JWC, wore a watch on a silver chain and had at least 10 other bills in his leather that she'd left behind, but not out of kindness. The more you filched, the more likely your mark would notice before he left the station. Una didn't always come home with a fattest haul, but she didn't get caught neither. Not often, anyway. Bail money added up, and she knew Marm Bly kept score. Una's empty stomach grumbled. The depot basement housed a ladies' restaurant, but she seldom ate on the job. You had to be ready to sprint away on a moment's notice, and a belly full of ham and cabbage or oyster stew would slow you down. But there were good pickings in the basement. Men perfumed and freshly shaven, strutting from the barber shop, ladies hurrying to the toilet, railway men stumbling from the saloon. And Una decided to do a little more prospecting before heading home. She slipped back into the station house through a different company's waiting room. On her way to the basement stairs, she spied a young boy dressed in shabby trousers, a patched coat, and dirty cap. Una rolled her eyes as he sidled up to a well-dressed man sporting a shiny top hat. "Don't do it, you looby," she thought. The boy cast a quick glance around the room, then reached for the man's overcoat. Una lingered at the head of the stairs, even though the room was about to become a hotbed of coppers. "Don't do it." She'd been that young once, and just as stupid. Miracle she hadn't ended up under lock and key at the House of Refuge. The boy managed to slip his grimy hand into the man's pocket. Una shook her head. Looby chin. A moment later, the boy's hand reappeared, clasping a gold watch. It was probably worth $100, but the boy wouldn't get more than 20 for it from a fence, less if he were working for a boss. But she had to give the kid credit for lifting it without the man's notice. Maybe he wasn't such a looby after all. He started to slink away, and Una turned back to the stairwell. She'd gone only a few steps when a deep voice hollered, "Thief!" Every muscle in her body tightened. Her feet tingled, ready to skedaddle. She glanced over her shoulder and saw the well-dressed man had the boy by the wrist, the shiny gold watch dangling on its chain from the boy's hand. He'd just earned himself a spot at the House of Refuge, the boy. Scrawny as he was, he'd as likely freeze to death as finish out his stretch there. Una mounted the steps and pushed through the growing gaggle of onlookers toward the boy before her smarts could stop her. She tucked her carpet bag under her arm and threw up her hands with a great show. "There you are, Willie. Your ma's worried plumb sick over you." She turned to the man. "This lad ain't bothering you, is he?"
The man's eyes narrowed. This lad is a thief. He tried to steal my pocket watch.
Una clutched her breast. A bit dramatic, to be sure, but she needed to keep the man's attention.
What? Willie, is that true?
The boy glanced from Una to the man's hand, still tight about his wrist, and the confusion in his face melted away.
Sorry, Aunt May. You know how Ma is when she's in liquor. I ain't had nothing to eat for 3 days.
Una held back a grimace. Sick was a far better card to play than drunk, but clearly the boy was green.
That ain't no excuse. You know you could have come to me for a meal. Give this fine gentleman his watch this very minute and apologize.
The man's fingers slowly loosened from the boy's wrist. He'd left red, angry marks on his skin. A feral, skittish look in the boy's eye told Una he might run, leaving her on the hook for his thievery. She grabbed the back of his threadbare coat and gave him a gentle shake.
Hand it over now, you hear?
Yes'm,
the boy muttered, but not before casting Una a glare. He dropped the watch into the man's waiting palm and gazed with longing as it was stuffed back in his overcoat pocket.
And what about your apology?
Una said.
Sorry, mister. I won't never do nothing like that again.
That's a good lad.
Una kept a grip on the boy's coat and turned to the man, flashing a doleful smile.
My deepest apology, sir. He's Ma's a good woman, just mourning the loss of her husband is all. I'm sure you understand, being such a fine-hearted gentleman. We won't be taking up any more of your time.
She gave the boy another shake, but you can best believe he'll be getting a good lashing before his supper. The man's expression didn't soften. He brushed the sleeve of his overcoat, as if his mere proximity to her and the boy had sullied it.
You see that he does.
Una made a hasty curtsy and dragged the boy by the back of his coat from the waiting room. When they reached the street, the boy shrugged to free himself, but she held on, yanking him behind one of the steel support columns of the nearby elevated railway.
What you playing at, boy?
She said.
You looking for a first-class ticket to Randall's Island? Would you care?
She let go of his coat.
I don't. But an imp like you who don't know his head from his rear gonna get every mark in their ansie, checking their watches and leather, looking around all suspicious-like, not to mention the coppers, makes my job and any other divers working a spot twice as hard.
I could have gotten away. That man had a hold on you like a vice.
You think they'll go easy on you in the tombs 'cause you're a kid? The beak will eat you for breakfast and spit your bones out in the yard. Don't give two licks about the likes of you or me.
The boy just shrugged. Hard-headed looby he was. Your parents know you're out here dipping into fancy men's pockets?
You ain't got no parents. Then you best get your scrawny ass over to the Five Points Mission. They'll feed you there. Learn you your letters, too. And send me west with the rest of the orphans.
Better than a life on the cross. Una's words met with another shrug. She crouched down. The boy's cheeks were chapped and mud-streaked, his nose raw and dribbling.
At least you gotta be smart. Easier pickings on the L.
She nodded at the tracks above them.
Fewer coppers, too. And you gotta start small. The loose change in a man's pocket or a few shines from a lady's purse. You take it all and they're gonna notice. Makes it harder to get away. A man about town's bound to realize his watch is missing, and soon. Best wait till he's settled down someplace with his nose stuck in a newspaper or a glass of gin before going after a prize like that.
She pulled out a hanky, spit on it, and swiped it across his cheeks.
Clean yourself up some, too. The best thief is one who don't look like a thief.
Once he was somewhat presentable, she reached into her pocket for a dime. Here, get yourself some supper, and think some on the mission. No sooner had she placed the dime in his hand than she felt his other hand fishing in her coat pocket.
That's good. Always easier to dip into someone's pocket when they're distracted with something else. But I ain't stupid enough to leave anything of value where the likes of you can free it.
He gave her a sheepish smile and withdrew his hand.
You gotta be quicker, too. Move in with a lighter touch. Maybe partner up with some of them boys who work the horse cars. They could teach you a thing or two.
You got a partner?
No, I don't trust...
A commotion by the depot entry snagged Una's attention. She stood and peeked around the iron beam. The man whom the boy had tried to pickpocket was outside speaking loudly with two coppers.
Una frowned. He'd seemed cross but mollified when they'd left him. She turned back to the boy, yanked him close, and dove through his pockets until she found the man's watch.
You cheeky little bastard. This is likely to wind us both in the clink.
She left the watch in the boy's pocket. Better it was found on him than her, but took back her dime.
I'll go north on 4th, you east on 42nd. Don't run. It'll only draw attention. And if I ever catch you in the depot again, I'll turn you into the coppers myself.
The words had scarcely left her mouth when the boy took off running. And not across 42nd Street, but up 4th Avenue, the way she'd planned to go.
Luby.
Una tucked the handles of her bag in the crook of her arm, squared her shoulders, and stepped beyond the beam. Two women with fur hats and muffs strolled past. Una walked beside them, matching their pace. Behind her, the commotion at the depot entry intensified. A shout, a whistle. Likely the coppers had seen the boy run and unscrambled their wits enough to give chase. Una didn't look back. She inched closer to the women, even as one shot her a cutty-eyed sneer. Una's clothes, clean and respectable as they were, paled next to these women's finery. But from a distance, it was hard to tell lamb's wool from horsehair. Real silk trim from imitation. Certainly if you had the peanut-sized brain of a copper. Eyeing her from the back at 20 paces away, she looked the same as any young lady out for a stroll with her friends. Or so Una hoped. Rule number 5. Look like you belong. Thick-soled boots thudded on the pavers behind them. One set, walking fast but not running. Una drew closer to the women.
Why, what a lovely muff you have,
Una said to the woman next to her, donning a pleasant smile.
Sable, is it?
The woman looked surprised.
Why, yes, my father brought it back from the continent.
Russia, I imagine. I hear the finest sable comes from there. It matches your hat quite perfectly.
Yes, they were a set.
There's a sable-trimmed reticule at Stewart & Company that would complement the ensemble nicely. Una knew because they'd fenced such a mole sack at Marmbly's shop just last week. The thief said it sold for $30 on Lady's Mile. They gave him 7 for it and sold it for 12, after Una had painstakingly removed A.T. Stewart's stitched-in label. The thudding boots drew closer. Una didn't need to turn around to know it was a copper. They must have split up to look for the boy after he slipped them. Unless the well-dressed man had recognized her and pointed her out among the crowd. The copper stalked past without a glance in her direction. Una exhaled with relief. She peeled away from the women and turned down 2nd Avenue. Tempting as it was to return to the depot for one more dive, she knew it was too dangerous. Stupid boy. She almost hoped the copper did catch him for all the trouble he'd caused her. And to think, she'd almost given him a dime. She'd gone less than a block when a snivelling voice sounded behind her.
There she is! That's the rogue!
This time, Una turned around long enough to see a bruiser of a copper barreling toward her. She ran.
Chapter 2
Una darted around fruit sellers and newsboys and hackneys. She leaped from the sidewalk and crossed under the L, barely making it across the street without being trampled by the approaching horse car. Still, the copper's boots sounded behind her. She tripped over the leg of a peddler's vegetable cart and stumbled, twisting her ankle fiercely, but kept running. With her traveling bag clutched to her breast, she sidestepped and elbowed through the crowd. She'd make quicker time if she turned off the busy thoroughfare, but couldn't risk trapping herself in a dead end. She needed to get her bearings. Allowing herself to slow, she pictured the checkered streets of the city like she were a pigeon flying overhead. To the west across 40th Street lay Reservoir Park. Its tangled walkways and overgrown shrubbery were a good place to slip the hulking tail behind her. Una headed in that direction, but doubted she could make it to the park before he overcame her. Already his clomping footfalls were gaining. No, she couldn't outrun him. She'd have to outsmart him. She further slowed her pace, hoping he'd think her about tuckered out, and returned to the picture in her mind of the city streets. There was an alley off Madison Avenue that led to a small courtyard. Farther on was a privy pit and narrow passage out to 38th Street. It wouldn't leave her much time, but it would have to do. The copper had slowed too, the fat sod. She could hear his dragging step.
He probably expected her to pull up short at the nearest lamppost to catch her breath. A fair enough assumption, given how even a loosely tied corset strangled a girl's lungs, and just what she hoped he would think. The alleyway appeared in sight. Una waited for a break in the crowd, then sprinted down the sidewalk and into the alley. Clothes strung between the buildings fluttered on the lines just above her head. She dashed through the small courtyard to the privies. The cold air stank of rotting potato peels and human waste. Two overflowing trash bins sat in the corner. Una crouched behind them, drawing her coat over her head and nestling among the crumpled newsprints, withered food scraps, and soot-stained rags. A moment later, the copper bounded into the privy yard. He whipped a hanky from his pocket to shield his nose from the stench. Una suppressed a chuckle. Coppers today had gone soft with their indoor crappers. He glanced about the small yard, opening the privy doors with his billy club just wide enough to peer inside. Then he hurried down the narrow exit at the far end. Once the thud of his footfalls were gone, Una stood and brushed off her coat. She had a minute, maybe two, before the copper circled back. She unpinned her hat and traded it for a headscarf buried beneath a lacy chemise in her bag. A stained apron, fingerless gloves, a smear of soot across one cheek, and her transformation was nearly complete. She shrugged out of her coat and strapped her bag to her back with a worn belt she kept handy for such emergencies. If she leaned forward just so, the bag would look like a hunch beneath her coat. Before putting it back on, she turned her coat inside out. Those new to Marm Bly's crew balked when Una had covered the fine satin lining with a patchwork of ratty cottonade. She'd paid Marm Bly $20 for the coat, a handsome sum after all. But the alteration proved indispensable in times like these. She'd gone from well-heeled traveler to gnarled rag-picker with time to spare. Rule number 11. Sometimes the best place to hide is in plain sight. Sure enough, not a minute later, the copper thundered back into the privy yard. Una stood hunched beside the trash cans, picking through the refuse.
"You seen a woman hiding about here?" he asked her.
She looked up and met his deep-set eyes. His cheeks were flush with exertion, and his panting breath clouded in the air.
"What kind of woman?" Una said, feigning a German accent.
"A thief."
Una turned back to the trash. She plucked a chunk of moldering bread from the bin, sniffed it, and tossed it to the ground.
"That isn't much of a description. She tall or short?"
"I don't know. About average, I guess."
"Fat or thin?"
The copper huffed.
"Not especially either."
"What was she wearing?"
"A blue coat and velvet hat."
Be it the cold, the smell, or a lunch that hadn't agreed with him, the copper looked about to explode with ire.
"One of those fancy hats with plumes and ribbon, or a simple affair?"
"I don't know,"
he bit out. Una found a gin bottle buried beneath peanut shells and empty sardine cans. She held it up and gave it a little shake. A few drops of liquid sloshed inside. She offered the bottle to the copper. He scowled. Una shrugged, wiped the bottle's mouth on her coat sleeve, and drank the gin herself.
"Well, you seen anyone matching that description?"
"I'm sorry, officer, but you just described half the women in this city. I'm certain I can't say."
The copper grumbled and started to stomp away.
"But there was a woman hiding behind these trash cans just a moment ago."
"There was?"
"Startled me half to death."
"Why didn't you say so?"
"Pretty girl, dark eyes. She had a little mole right here."
Una pointed to the side of her nose.
"You didn't say anything about a mole."
The copper looked as if it was all he could do to keep from reaching out and strangling her.
"Which way did she go?"
Una pointed down the alley toward 38th Street.
"Out that way, turned right, I believe."
She snickered as the copper sprinted away. Gullible bastards, the lot of them. She wiped her hands on a scrap of newsprint and hobbled out the opposite end of the alley, beyond the privies and their stench. Chapter 3. Una kept up her hunchback disguise for several blocks until she was safely shadowed by the towering brick and wooden tenements of the city's lower wards. There she unstrapped the traveling bag from her back, but didn't bother righting her coat. A week's worth of trash, Horse shit and mud covered the streets. No point to risk dirtying the fine side of her coat when there was no one here to fool or impress. She kept her step measured, neither dawdling nor hurried, like someone who didn't have on her person an engraved cigarette case and a host of pinched trinkets that could earn her a one-way ticket to the workhouse on Blackwell's Island. Her stomach rumbled like it had in the station. Were it not for that boy, she'd have already fenced her swag at Marm Bly's and be washing down her supper with a pint of ale at Heyman's grocer. She knew better than to involve herself with such shenanigans. The first rule of survival on these streets was to keep your head down and look out for yourself. Her mother had been a do-gooder, and look where it got her. Burned to a crisp like an overdone steak. Never mind where that left Una. She nodded to Officer O'Malley at the corner of the Bowery and Grand Street. She told him she worked at a soap factory, and Marm Bly paid him to believe it. He tipped his hat to her and continued on his rounds. Even so, the cigarette case weighed heavy in her pocket. She'd feel better once she had a pocket full of brass instead. A block and a half farther on, she spotted a tall man in a dark blue frock coat, leaning against a lamppost. Her eye snagged on the glint of silver at his throat before taking in his face. Barney Harris. He was pretending, not very adroitly, to be reading a magazine as if it were perfectly natural for a well-dressed reporter to be loitering in the slums. He shifted from one foot to the other, his eyes peeking above the page of the magazine every few seconds. The screeching brakes of the nearby L train startled him, and he bolted upright, bobbling his magazine and nearly falling off the curb. Una chuckled, even as she slowed. Maybe she ought to turn down the next alley to avoid him. Marm Bly hated being kept past supper. Besides, Una didn't feel much like gabbing. But she owed him for giving her a false alibi last month at the Opera House, after a man accused her of stealing his signet ring. The soprano had been magnificent that night, and if the coppers had taken her back to the station and frisked her, they'd have found more than the man's ring hidden in the folds and flounces of her skirt. But when they'd questioned her, she told the coppers she'd been in the company of Mr. Harris all night. He had, in fact, sought her out during the first intermission, and shyly complimented her dress, stolen, of course, and a bit too tight. So the yarn she'd spun for the coppers wasn't entirely a lie. Thank God Barney correctly read the look on her face when she approached with the coppers and, after a moment's bubbling, corroborated her story. Una owed him, and she hated owing anyone. It went against her rules. So despite the plunder weighing down her skirts, she continued in his direction. "You stand out around here like soot on snow," she said, approaching him. "You take the First Avenue L in the wrong direction again?"
"Miss Kelly, a pleasure to see you. I hoped you'd be by sooner or later."
"You beat dirt all the way here from Newspaper Row to see little old me? I don't know whether to feel flattered or frightened."
"Flattered, I assure you. I'd have brought flowers if I thought you fancied such things."
"I fancy gold, diamonds, imported French silk."
"I'd try that, too, if I didn't think you'd take it straight to Marm Bly's back door."
She shrugged. "A girl's got to eat." He pursed his lips and made a soft hmm sound. His gray eyes narrowed, not in disapproval. Una had seen enough of those squinty-eyed looks to know, but in bemusement, like she were some rare bird in a curiosity shop, songless and molting, a bird in need of saving. Could he be the man to do it? His eyes seemed to say. Could he spring the lock of her unfortunate circumstances? He was a decent man, Barney was, handsome in a boyish kind of way. Had enough brass in the family coffers to afford silly ornamentation, like the silver tie pin he wore. His wages at the New York Herald certainly wouldn't be enough. Trouble was he had a cage of his own, bigger, perhaps, and cast in finer metal, waiting for her if she took his bait. So instead of batting her eyelashes and smiling shyly, she jabbed him on the shoulder, swiping his pin while she was at it. "I know you didn't come all this way to whisper sweet nothings in my ear. What do you want?" He frowned and tucked the magazine under his arm. "You know anything about the murder last Saturday on Cherry Street?"
"You mean Big Nose Joe? What of it?"
"How'd it happen?"
"Heard he was strangled. Ain't heard much else."
A woman pushing a wheelbarrow full of second-hand stockings trudged toward them.
15 cents a pair,"
she called to anyone in earshot. A greasy rag covered her head, and a faded shawl hung around her shoulders. Una grabbed a
sample complete. Ready to continue?